a store and hiding behind the wheel. He was the captain, damn it. He shouldn't be afraid of his own crew.
I don't think Lou wants to outright accuse Argrid of staging Milo's abduction without proof.
As if she knew they were talking about her, Lou popped up from below decks. Vex watched her note their location. The southeastern shore of Lake Regolith had come into view. Nudiza so far behind to the west, all that was visible was Blue Lake, before she made for the pilot house.
How long until we reach the Tunkian Syndicate? Lou asked.
Nayeli shot to her feet.
What?
She asked. Lou looked at Vex. His sympathy won out. He deserved Nayeli's wrath, not her.
We need your aunt, Nay, he said. Her budwig beans are our best chance of hearing what might have happened to Ibarra.
Each budwig plant came with two beans. One could be put in one person's ear, the other in another place or even someone else's ear, and the two beans relayed sound across the whole island. It was one of the rarest plants in Grace Loray. Raiders hid budwig beans in other syndicates' territories to spy on them. Elite members of Grace Loray's military used them to communicate, and they grew only in the eastern part of the island. Unfortunately for Vex. Nayeli barreled into the pilot house and punched him.
You traitor! Do you have any idea what it's like when I go back? No, because all you think is Vex get what Vex need.
Budwig beans?
Lou ignored Nayeli's ranting and stared at Vex in shock.
That might be useful.
Nayeli stomped out onto the deck, her curses muffled. But Lou was gaping at him. Vex grinned.
I know, Princessa. I'm actually helping you. Shocking, isn't it?
But I take it from Nayeli's tone that the Tunkians aren't friendly? Vex gave Lou a confused look, then realized what language Nayeli had been shouting in.
Oh, she was speaking Thuti, a dialect from Tunke. I thought you'd know that. You look like you have Tunkian blood. But while I'd love to give a history lesson...
Lou picked up on it faster than he expected.
Was Nayeli part of the Tunkian Syndicate?
Captain,
Edda cut in, pointing at the shoreline. Vex swung out a spyglass, but Lou snatched it from him. She surveyed the mouth of the approaching Lido River that was a rippling break in the line of jungle. Vex ripped the spyglass back from her.
Don't touch my stuff.
12 steamboats, Lou stated. In a row, unmoving, not flying council flags. Are they Kansu's boats? She must have guessed you'd go to her. Vex grumbled.
Nayeli, Edda, I'm open to suggestions.
Nayeli spun away from where she'd been sulking on the bow.
Oh, I have a suggestion for you, asshole, she said in Thuti and made a gesture that Lou had to understand without any translation.
How hostile is Kansu? Could we negotiate with her?
Lou asked. Vex shrugged.
Best we reach Nayeli's aunt, use what budwig beans she'll give us, and be on our merry way. Kansu won't be thrilled if she finds out that you're with the council and trying to save an Argridian.
It's for her benefit as well, Lou countered. If Milo isn't found, Argrid will force the council to blame the raiders.
Yeah, she won't care. It'll piss her off that you assume she needs the council to protect her syndicate.
Vex jerked on a lever, slowing the meander to a halt so they could think.
I need to get past her blockade. What if we-
The Shilly, Lou said. Go north, take the Shilly River. It connects with the Lido farther inland. You can avoid Kansu's raiders that way.
You're neglecting to mention how the Shilly connects to the Lido,
Vex countered. Lou's brows lifted.
Are you afraid of a little waterfall?
A little waterfall,
Vex chirped, then heard the cracking of his voice and cleared his throat.
I'm more worried about the council-run system of platforms and pulleys that lower boats down the falls. You have to pay the council soldiers, who have free rein to search your boat if, oh, say, a diplomat is missing and an escaped convict is on the loose.
Lou gave the smile she'd given from before they'd escaped the castle. The one Nayeli now wore, too, eager and demented.
Oh, God, Vex thought. Did I bring another Nayeli onto my boat?
What if I could get you past the falls and the council soldiers? Lou asked.
No Kansu? No soldiers either?
Nayeli hurled herself through the door and looped one arm around Lou.
I like this one a lot. Can we keep her?
But Vex's eye was pinned on Lou. How, Princessa?
You mentioned to the council that the last time you dealt with Ingvar Pilkvist, it involved a shipment of aerated blossoms, Lou said. Do you still have it?
Vex considered. Etta, mind the engine. Make sure we have enough fuel to get up to the Shilly. Nay, go get our blossoms.
Only three, Lou corrected. Etta and Teo can pose as a family and take the lift. Soldiers won't look twice at something so innocent. You, Nayeli, and I will take another route.
Etta dropped obediently through the hatch as Nayeli pulled back from Lou, aghast.
Are you saying I don't come across as innocent?
Lou laughed, and it stopped any smart-ass comment Vex had been about to make.
Not even a little, Lou said, smiling.
Nayeli beamed.
Good. I'd hate for that rumor to start.
We're splitting up?
Vex drummed his fingers on the helm as he plowed the boat northeast, away from the Lido.
I figured you'd use the blossoms on the boat somehow.
You thought I could make the whole boat fly?
You melted an iron rock. A flying boat isn't that far-fetched.
Lou gave him an incredulous look.
We'll each take a blossom and jump off the cliff away from the falls, out of the soldier's sight. The moment we get close to the ground, we'll...
She stopped, her eyes going to where Vex tapped a loud, incessant rhythm on the helm.
You're afraid, she guessed.
Vex's hand stilled.
Of falling to my death? Ridiculous, I know.
You won't die. The timing must be exact, but...
You know how long the effects of aerated blossoms last, don't you? Only as long as you inhale. A few seconds, which means our margin for death is that long.
Lou smiled. Vex squirmed.
He'd been right to be terrified. So far, her plans had a certain perilous twist to them, as though she wasn't aware of how mortal some people were.
It's been a few years, but I've done this before, Lou said. We'll be fine.
A few years? Back when you were a killer child, or whatever the hell the revolutionaries made you into?
The lightness on Lou's face vanished. Vex stepped closer, as if he could chase it down and coax it back out. Her expression went furious.
If the plan doesn't suit you, find your own way, Raider.
Before Vex could say anything else, Lou threw herself down the hatch. Lou landed in the hall as Nayeli emerged from a bunk room with three aerated blossoms. The spiky balls were no bigger than her palms. An untrained eye would dismiss the plants as sea urchins.
Now what?
Nayeli asked, but Lou pushed past her.
Ask your captain. It is what I'm paying him for, after all.
Lou heaved herself into the opposite bunk room. Teo sat on the cot they'd shared.
Lou, is it morning?
He rubbed his eyes. Lou dropped onto the bed and put her arms around him. He stilled.
Lou?
Once, when she was small, her parents had taken her to a church service outside Port Fausta. The other parishioners had dismissed them as a devout family, freeing them to get the layout in order to rescue allies Argrid had imprisoned beneath the main mission building. As Lou's parents had counted the windows and doors, she'd listened to priests beg the pious god to forgive the congregation for the impure acts they had committed.
Hypocrites,
her mother had called the priests afterward.
They call free thought impure so they can burn a man for speaking against the Argridian king, but the burning doesn't displease their god.
Lou had nodded gravely, folding away words like impure until the day she first stumbled back to a safe house with blood on her hands. She learned why the priests didn't beg forgiveness for killing people. Not even the pious god could cleanse a soul of that stain. Teo shifted in Lou's arms, reaching up to pat her on the head.
It's all right, Lou.
Tears warmed her eyes. She was so grateful to have Teo with her. An anchor to the life she was meant to lead. Even though he was still a few years shy of how old she'd been when her father had first sent her out to spy on Argridians, she was glad she had brought him on this quest. How weak she was to be so selfishly relieved for his presence here. Lu held Teo and breathed. Night fell. The darkness so disorienting that Vex almost forgot their plan as he followed Nayeli and Lu up the tree-lined shore. Dense jungle pressed against the shilly, the trees hung with moss and vines that wafted in the breeze. The churning, bellowing anger of the shilly Lido waterfall drowned out any chirps of wildlife. Vex met Lu where she hid behind a wide tree trunk. The water from the falls made the humidity worse, and Vex's hands were damp, his eye patch chafing. He peeked around the trunk to get a view of the area where captains anchored to pay the fee before their boats were lowered down the falls or searched. Lanterns glowed from the flat wooden buildings on either bank of the river. Steamboats waited along each side in two long lines for the lift to lower them down. The soldiers on guard checked the boats that sailed up to the docking stations. Vex had braved this route when there was a soldier on duty he could pay off. Back then, only one in four boats was ever pulled over in random searches. Now triple the guards fanned down the walkways, swarming every boat. The higher security didn't sit well with him, in the same way that New Diza's wharf market had seemed off. Something had changed. Was it because of the missing Argridian? The rapid meander was third in line. Vex clamped his hand on the tree trunk, knuckles tense. He felt a tension on him and looked at Lu.
Can I help you, Princessa?
She pulled back, rolling her eyes.
She doesn't like when you call her that.
Nayeli whispered, lounging against the tree. Vex frowned.
Really?
You thought I enjoyed it, Raider? Lu scoffed. That I flinched out of pleasure?
But there you go, calling me Raider. It was a give and take.
Lu bowed her head to the trunk.
Fine, I won't call you Raider. You won't—
Shh! Excuse me, I'm trying to—
No, look.
Vex pointed. The rapid meander had sailed up to a walkway that stretched beyond the payment station, and guards came up. Etta went to the starboard railing, her hand lifted in greeting. Teo's vague outline could be seen sitting on the table in the pilot house. Vex exhaled, held it, struggled to breathe. As soldiers reached Etta, others on a boat behind the meander shouted,
Raiders! Tunkian Syndicate!
A scuffle broke out as soldiers grabbed the crew of the raider boat and wrestled them to the deck. The guards approaching Etta dove for the other boat, helping their comrades pin down the crew and rip into their lower deck hatch. Nausea made Vex waver, his knees slipping on the moist undergrowth. Memories overlapped this moment, watching soldiers attack people for merely looking suspicious. Tearing apart their property, screaming, heretics, sinners, the pious god condemns you. Vex's body went rigid. Had the bill that the Argridian diplomat lobbied for, the one to eradicate stream raiders, passed? Even if it had, surely the council wouldn't have implemented anything so soon. Lu would have said something to him, right? Etta slipped back into the pilot house and the meander sailed on. From this angle, all Vex could see was the stern bobbing as the current shoved his boat against the barrier that kept it from plummeting over the falls. Vex couldn't feel a damn thing until the rapid meander drifted forward, swallowed up into the lift contraption. The soldiers had let it pass. They'd accepted the Gaias and the story about Etta and Teo being a family. Vex gasped, forehead going to the tree trunk. God above, he needed a drink.
There weren't as many soldiers when I was here last, Lu whispered.
Her words made the silence between the three of them more potent, and Vex realized they'd all been on edge.
Yeah.
Vex lifted his head, eyeing Lu.
We're in Kansu's territory, for God's sake. Why would they care about a boat of hers that much? It wouldn't be unusual.
At the mention of Kansu, Nayeli stalked off into the trees.
They're looking for Milo,
Lou breathed. The Argridians would have been insulted if the Council hadn't increased security at checkpoints. She glanced at Vex, then back to the docking stations. At least the Council can control this. Vex gestured at the soldiers.
Why'd they go after the Tunkian boat, not ours? The Council doesn't think raiders took him, right? They should be looking into everyone, equally.
He was trying to get her to say it. Oh, Raider, I forgot to tell you, the Council is actively trying to kill people like you now. Not that that affects our arrangement.
Lou shook her head, but her brows pinched.
We should go.
She stood and Vex stepped in front of her, rage shooting through him.
Your Council isn't as holy as you think they are, he snapped. If raiders did abduct the Argridian, you'd better believe they had damn good reasons for it. They're shunned from society because your precious council refuses to help them. You remember Pilkvist shouting about the council stealing money? Well, they are. They may not think they did, but the council ripped away the main source of income from the syndicates when they started mainland trade. And instead of helping the syndicates fill that gap, the council blames them for suffering. I hope raiders did abduct that dumbass Argridian to shed light on the council's many, many flaws.
By starting the war again? Lou retorted, a biting whisper. If this is truly raiders seeking attention for injustices, it proves that they have no love for Grace Luray. They endanger our whole country, and they deny that the council's changes have helped other people on this island. Other law-abiding people. There are jobs now. Jobs in magic, in trade, in sailing. How can the syndicates be so upset as to go to war?
None of those jobs went to raiders, Vex said. None of the council's support helps anyone too poor to even know where to start. Not that I'm a huge proponent of the syndicates. They definitely have their flaws too. But they aren't wholly bad, and the council isn't wholly good.
Lou opened her mouth but stopped. Her pause showed confusion on her face, like maybe he was right.
If none of this had happened, Vex continued. If that Argridian was still in New Deza sipping tea and eating fruit tarts, would you have given a thought to raiders?
Lou's face slackened.
Honestly? She breathed. No.
She left before he could respond. Vines lashed at Lou's face as she shot into the jungle. She had expected the council to increase security in response to Milo's abduction, as she had told Vex. And it wasn't unusual that the soldiers would target raiders. They were the criminals on Grace Luray, and going after them would appease the Argridians. The reason Lou didn't think that raiders had abducted Milo was that she distrusted Argrid more. But if she hadn't, she felt the seed of what her assumption would have been. The same seed that had let her dismiss the boat at the falls. Could Lou afford to weigh ethical arguments with war looming? She hadn't considered morality during the revolution. She had taken definitive action at her parents' behest. Lou looked back at the docking station, where soldiers still searched the Tunkian boat, its possessions spread across the walkway along the riverbank, the crew bound and silent. What was she fighting for? Lou was trying to find Milo to discredit Argrid, but she was trying to show raiders that the council could protect them too. That was what she wanted. What she had to believe the council wanted, for the raiders to stop carrying on with their own syndicate governings, for them to submit to council rule. But she had never asked herself why the syndicates were so opposed to the council. They were criminals. They were stubbornly set in their ways. They warred with change. The reasons had been varied and flippant. Nothing true, though. Nothing concrete. Nothing like what Vex had said, that there were gaps in the council's rule that the syndicates made up for. Lou hated herself, suddenly, brightly. She was better than this. She was better than assumptions and prejudice. Such things felt too much like Argrid. The cliff eventually sputtered into flatlands, but it would take hours to reach them. The quickest route lay where Lou came to a wobbling stop, at the edge of the cliff, looking down into a jungle so thick and dark that she couldn't see the ground.
It would be like jumping into nothing.
Vex stopped beside her, Nayeli with them again.
Don't use the aerated blossom until you get as close to the ground as possible, Lou said, glad to have this simple task to refocus her. She had attached each of their blossoms to a string around their wrists.
Inhale through the hole at the bottom, she told herself. The gases within will let you levitate for a span equal to the time of inhalation.
Nayeli grinned, her teeth a slice of white in the darkness. Behind her, the lanterns of the lift base glowed, distant enough that it was a blur of yellow. No one would see them. No one would know if they crashed to the ground, their bodies breaking on impact. Vex seemed to be thinking that exact thing. He readied the blossom in his hand, rolling his shoulders back, stretching his neck.
All right. All right. We can do this. We can.
Of course we can, Nayeli said, turning to Vex.
Her foot hit the edge of the cliff.
Don't you worry. We'll be...
She tripped, flailed, and fell into the darkness. Vex teetered next to her.
Shit!
But Nayeli's manic giggles flew up to them before the shadows swallowed her.
I hope she hits a tree, Vex whined.
But he watched the darkness, one ear tipped, waiting to hear either a shout of pain or the crack of bones. But there was nothing. Vex exhaled, but the tension in his stance didn't ease.
I find it hard to believe that the infamous Devereaux Bell is afraid of heights, Lou said.
Vex snapped a look at her.
If you tell anyone, I'll...
You'll do what to me, Vex?
Lou made her voice sultry and pressed closer, trying to distract him like she had in the dungeon and on the dock. His eye narrowed when he realized what she was doing.
I think I hate you.
Not without reason, Lou replied, and shoved him. Vex sank into the air with a curse. Lou gathered her strength and jumped after him. The night wind slapped at her as she fell, coaxing tears from her eyes. Her stomach lurched into her neck, bounced into her toes, the air tugging her body into shapes she didn't know it could make. Her heart thundered with adrenaline, and all else faded until there was just the roaring of the falls and the softness of the wind and her body, floating, hovering, unwinding. She had always loved traveling this way as a child. She'd used avoiding the Argridian soldiers stationed at the lift as an excuse to dive right into the emptiness. And as she fell now, she imagined the broken parts of her lifting into the sky. She imagined coming back together, the best pieces, renewal and rebirth. Branches scratched her cheeks, vines snapped under her weight. As the ground came up in a rush, Lou put the aerated blossom against her lips and inhaled. The gases filled her lungs, tasting of grime and brackish river water. Her body jerked to a stop so close to the ground that she could reach out and place her palm flat to it. The gases evaporated, and Lou fell to her hands and knees. Blossoms were one of the few plants Lou used for that reason. They didn't linger. Someone grabbed her shoulders and yanked her to her feet.
Why the hell did you wait that long to use the blossom?
Vex shouted. Here, the fall's noise was deafening.
You were worried for me?
Yeah, I...
Lou's brows rose. Vex appeared to notice his words at the same time she did. His mouth slanted.
You still owe me any botanical elixir I want.
Nayeli stood nearby, tapping her foot.
Come on! I don't like it here.
She turned for the Shilly, where they planned to reunite with the Meander.
And if you died,
Vex continued, walking beside Lou,
I'd be stuck with Teo. Don't get me wrong, he's a great kid, but I don't much want to add a 6-year-old to my crew.
I get it,
Lou said, but she smiled.
It would be a horrible inconvenience to you if I died.
Glad we understand each other.
The Shilly wove on after the falls, curving around and linking up with the Lido River. The rapid meander had already docked at the bend, lights dimmed so anyone else would miss it. Lou hopped aboard, followed by Nayeli and Vex.
Teo, she whispered as she moved toward the pilot house.
It's all right.
A lantern flared to life on the map table. Lou ripped a knife out of her holster. The woman near the lantern had a pistol on one hip, a sword on the other, and a brand on her wrist. Her short black hair draped around her face, revealing a mark on her neck. Four dots, two vertical above two horizontal. A Tunkian tattoo.
"You thought you'd outsmart me in my own territory?"
The woman clucked her tongue, golden tan skin glowing in the lantern's yellow light. Adrenaline surged into Lou's veins.
"Who are you? Where's Teo?"
"Lou."
Vex's voice behind her was flat.
"This is Kansu Darzi."
Kansu cut a harsh grin.
"The boy is safely on his way to Port Mezitib with my raiders. Which is where you were headed, weren't you, Nay? You know Fatima doesn't like outsiders, but I should have expected as much. You don't give a damn about what we want."
Lou threw an accusatory glare, but in the lantern's jerky light, the expression on Nayeli's face was sorrowful. Whatever was happening was exactly what Nayeli had feared.
"What's going on? Who's Fatima?"
Lou demanded.
"Fatima is Nayeli's aunt,"
Vex said with a sigh.
"The woman we were going to see. The Tunkian Syndicate's magic expert."
15.
Well, this had unraveled quickly.
"Did you think we were maybe trying to avoid confrontation?"
Vex asked Kansu as he steered down the river. He kept his focus on the shadowed bow of the meander and the hunched shape of Lou, probably glaring at him. Nayeli had stayed on deck only as long as it took to announce that she'd oversee the engine in Etta's stead. Vex could feel the tension radiating off Nayeli. When she exploded this time, it wouldn't be with curses. She'd be quiet and sulking and damn heartbreaking, and Vex clenched his fists on the helm to keep himself from punching Kansu. She'd probably drop him to the deck before he could even land a blow, and Nayeli wouldn't want him to assault her anyway.
"You can't slip in and out of my territory whenever you want,"
Kansu's voice came from behind him, where she sat on the table.
"I don't need you mucking stuff up like you usually do."
"I don't steal from you," Vex hissed. "Nayeli won't let me."
Kansu grabbed onto that.
"She doesn't deserve your protection."
"The fact you can say that proves she was right to leave. She's part of you, Kansu. I mean, God, she jumped off a cliff to avoid seeing you. There are some strong feelings still."
Nayeli would kill him if she knew he'd said that. No, castrate him. Then kill him. Kansu darkened.
"It doesn't matter. You shouldn't have come here. I don't need your distractions, not now."
Vex eyed her.
"Why not now?"
Kansu shot him a derisive look.
"Gods, you were in the council's dungeon. Don't tell me you didn't hear what's going on. They've created a bill to wipe us out. One of the Argridian delegates vanished 3 days ago, and they think we abducted him, of course. You saw the security at the falls? It's that way everywhere. The council didn't waste any time bowing down to Argrid's call to turn on us. Tell me why the hell you need to see Fatima. It'd better be important. We've got too much to worry about otherwise."
Vex felt a twinge deep in his gut. He'd suspected that was why things were getting worse, but having her confirm it was almost more than he could handle. He nodded at Lou.
"She hired me to help with something so the council doesn't..."
Kansu shot off the map table. Vex flinched. Shit.
"You aren't stupid enough to bring a Grace Lorraine to my territory. For help."
"Let Fatima decide who gets help,"
Vex said.
"That was the deal, right? You run the syndicate, Fatima manages the needy, and Nayeli gets battered by your emotional warfare."
Kansu opened her mouth, so Vex said what he knew would shut her up.
"You aren't the one who has to pick up the pieces every time you hurt Nayeli."
He looked back at Kansu.
"If you love her like I know you do, you'll let us do our business and leave, peacefully."
Kansu slumped back against the table.
Moments like these clashed with her raider head guys, making it impossible for Vex to be intimidated by her. But everyone had weaknesses. The one thing that no matter how deeply buried would send them to their knees.
Just drive,
Kansu mumbled. Vex faced forward.
With pleasure.
As the rapid meander sped into the night, Lu paced from the bow to the pilot house and back. Were they Kansu's prisoners now? Was Teo? Were they going to see Fatima? Should they tell Kansu their mission? Surely she would understand the importance of finding Milo. But every time Lu gathered the gumption to storm into the pilot house, she saw Kansu glowering at her with eyes like fire and blood. Lu paced back to the bow. After sunrise, the rapid meander joined up with other boats chugging toward the bustle and hum of Grace Loray's largest southeastern city, Port Mezitibe. Like the other four main ports on Grace Loray, it could trace its origins to an immigrant settlement. In this case, a group of Tunkians had founded the city when they'd settled in Grace Loray centuries ago. It sat at the confluence of the Lido and the Draedus rivers, just above the southern swamplands. With the sun lifting behind the city, the port's iconic skyline took Lu's breath away. An old Argridian fort of walled gray stone at the divide between the two rivers. The wall that faced up the Lido bore the church's symbol, a monstrous section of white stones in a curved V.
Fort Chastity, said a voice beside her.
Lu flinched but didn't move away from where she leaned against the exterior of the pilot house. Kansu, halfway out the door, folded her arms.
The last thing some Tunkians saw on this island. At least it was a pretty view.
Why is it still standing? Lu asked.
She had never spent much time in Port Mezitibe, but in other cities, citizens had been quick to dismantle or repurpose anything that had been used by Argrid. Seeing the church's symbol unscathed was rare.
To remind us,
Kansu said.
The Argridians named it Chastity because they labeled Tunkians whores for having four gods and not worshipping their one. Every time we see it, we remember where we came from and who we are, and how no one can take that from us.
Vex, at the helm, let out a sharp whistle.
Stand down, Kansu! We're almost there!
Kansu gave Lu a cold smile and ducked back into the pilot house. Lu's grandmother, Kari's mother, had been Tunkian. Lu had only vague memories of her. The war had taken Kari's parents early. And with bloodshed and cannon fire a too regular part of life, Kari hadn't been able to pass down the culture of her history. Family traditions became as rare as sugar, delicious when they had it, but not crucial to their survival. And as the war dragged on, Kari told Lu less and less. Lu knew general things about Tunkians. The four-dot tattoo some of them wore as homages to their gods. Certain recipes Kari made on occasion. A sweet bean pastry for birthdays. Or a breakfast dish packed with spices that lingered in Lu's nose for days after. But Lu didn't consider herself Tunkian, as much as she didn't think about her Argridian heritage from Tom. She was Grace Lorraine. Lu's head began to throb. She blamed sleeplessness and focused on staying alert as the meander followed the Lido along the southern stretch of Port Mezitibe. Dozens of docks stretched around Fort Chastity, hosting a variety of vessels in the dawn's mist. A few patrol boats were stationed in the widest part of the river, where it forked in two, keeping watch over early morning extractions as crews lowered diving bells into the water and hauled up plants. Shadows from Fort Chastity darkened the river, and more shadows continued in patchy sections as the fort ended and the haphazard city buildings began. Smaller tributaries of the Lido snaked into the port just like the rivers that made a spiderweb through New Diza. But as Vex steered the meander into one of them, the difference became clear. Where New Diza's rivers were mostly clean, lined by well-kept stones and ducking beneath arched bridges, these waters ran brown, the color growing darker the farther into the city they went. What bridges they passed under were wooden and decrepit, the banks sliding off in wet chunks. People sat along the water regardless, fishing rods dipped into the surface. Lou had heard of such poverty in New Diza. If the raiders would submit to Grace Lorraine's governing, council members said, things would improve for them. But council funds will not support defiant anarchists. But was every soul suffering under these conditions a raider who refused to acknowledge the council's sovereignty? Even so, did it matter? They were citizens. They were here. Lou swallowed the foul air, the throbbing in her head growing more potent. The rapid meander wove into Port Mezitib until they saw the tangle of jungle that fought back the wall of the city. Buildings in cramped blocks let the barest hints of sunlight through, trapping bitter air in narrow, dirty streets. When they were so far from the Lido that Lou wasn't sure she could find her way back to it, Vex let the meander drift to a stop against a dock. Kansu left the pilot house, followed by Vex. After a beat, Nayeli emerged from below decks, but she didn't make eye contact with anyone.
Your people should be within,
Kansu told Vex. Her voice was softer or tired. Lou searched the buildings for the one Kansu meant, but the streets were nearly empty, save for a stumbling beggar or two. Faces peeked from windows behind holy curtains. Shadows wavered as people watched them from doorways. Silence clouded the boats that drifted past, manned by crews with gaunt, watchful faces. The jolt of recognition was as unpleasant as the air. This was how every port had been during the war, filled with dread, people hiding in fear of Argridians snatching them up for cleansing. The boat jerked, followed by the thump of boots hitting the ground. Kansu walked off down a road. For all her worries about escorting them in, she was leaving now? She hadn't intercepted them for the escort then. She was saying, "This is my territory." Nayeli jumped off the boat without a word, trailing Kansu into the port.
Nayeli is from Kansu's syndicate, Lou guessed. She left to join your crew.
Vex gave a grunt that could have been a laugh.
If only it were that simple.
The boat teetered, the mud on the starboard side sucking against Vex's boots. Lou plopped on his right side, and the thud of her next to him sent him rocking back. She grabbed his wrist to steady him and felt a shiver rush up his arm before he jerked away.
Blind on this side, Vex snapped, waving his hand on the side of his head.
I didn't mean...
Come on, Vex said, irritated. It isn't far.
He started after Nayeli and Kansu. Lou followed, unable to tolerate the tension in Vex's corded shoulders. She had affronted him, and she hated that she not only realized, but cared. He turned a corner, and as she hurried after him, she steeled herself to apologize. But Kansu stood on the road, facing them, holding a sack. Vex put his hands out.
This isn't necessary. It's always necessary for people we don't trust.
I trust her,
Vex returned, and Lou knew shock showed on her face.
She won't tell anyone, will you, Lou?
Tell anyone what?
Nayeli crossed her arms, sighed softly.
Wear the bag. It's easier.
Lou's mouth dropped open. Wherever they were going, Kansu didn't want her to know how to find it. A secret raider lair, no doubt.
Teo's there? Lou demanded. Where you're taking me, he'll be there?
Kansu bowed.
Safe as can be. On my honor as the Tunkian raider head.
Lou's focus went to Vex.
And this place, she said, is where we need to go.
Vex popped a shoulder.
Fatima hears everything that happens on this island.
Lou snatched the bag from Kansu. She tugged it over her own head, blocking out what depressing daylight there had been, and held out an arm.
Let's go.
Fingers clasped one of her elbows, guiding her. And all Lou had to identify their location was the ground beneath her boots. The squishy mud of the road, hard thumping floorboards, squishy mud again. They were leading her in circles, she guessed,
to make it harder for her to find her way, but she didn't care. Let her be with Teo. Let whatever help the Tunkians could give in finding Milo be given. Let this be over. After at least an hour of trudging through the port, someone, Nayeli, hissed in warning.
Soldiers, whispered a voice next to her.
Lu started to realize it was Vex holding her elbow, not Kansu. But muffled, gruff orders and the crash of a window made her tip her head, straining to hear more.
What are they doing?
She reached for the edge of the sack.
I can remove that sack and I'll leave you here, Kansu snapped ahead of her.
Beyond their hiding place, an alley maybe, someone shrieked.
We don't know anything! We aren't involved!
Another crash of glass breaking.
Bad enough you stink up our cities, but now you raiders stir up trouble with Argrid. Do us a favor and get off our island.
A chorus of cheers followed. Lou swayed, disoriented.
Who is that? She whispered. We have to help.
My people will deal with the Grace Lorraeans,
Kansu said.
We'll have to go a different way.
A battle cry came from a different source, and sure enough, someone cried,
Tunkian raiders!
And the distinct clash and bang of hand-to-hand combat echoed. Vex pulled Lou away as the chaos behind them intensified, shouts and swords chiming.
Those couldn't be Grace Lorraeans, Lou breathed. It isn't like this.
Like it was at the docking station?
Lou couldn't see Vex, but she heard the dare in his voice.
Tensions with Grace Lorraeans, especially soldiers, are usually high. But no, it isn't always this strained.
His grip on her tightened, and his final words weighed heavy. He was trying to get her to realize something, as he had at the falls. But she had already realized it. She was on this journey because she had foreseen this outcome from the start. Grace Lorraine at war again. She felt the depth of it now. The true divide in where the conflict would originate.
That's why the place we're going still exists, came Kansu's voice. Thought we'd be able to shut down the sanctuary after the war, but turns out we traded one tyrant for another.
Lou had no argument, just that ache in her head that would not go away. Once again, floorboards thudded under their boots. A staircase led down, a door creaked open, and they stopped. The sack was yanked off Lou's head, and she blinked in hazy light. A yard stretched before her, enclosed by looming buildings on three sides, and the wall of the city on the fourth, complete with tangled vines and branches trying to crawl over the top. Hovels filled the area, interspersed with campfires, lines hung with laundry, and stacks of barrels. And people. Dozens of people, kneeling over those fires or hanging that laundry, men, women, and children. Dirt smudged each face. Every outfit was in tatters. Some rested on mats, their bodies quaking with tremors Lou knew too well. Shaking sickness. Everyone was Tunkian, as the language Lou heard was not the Grace Lorraine dialect or Argridian.
What had Vex called it? Thuti?
But a voice brought her out of her shock and confusion.
Lou!
She shot forward, and Kansu didn't stop her. Not that anyone could have. The moment Lou saw Teo racing up a dirt path toward her, she forgot all else. He was grinning, and he didn't look harmed or mistreated. He locked his arms around Lou's neck, grip clamping and choking, but Lou didn't care as she scooped him up just as strongly.
Are you all right?
Lou shifted to look at him.
Are you hurt?
I'm fine. Etta took real good care of me. She made the raiders get me a type of candy. I don't remember the name, but it was so sweet. Like those pastries you got me and Annalisa, remember? Like that. You have to try it. Come on.
Teo wiggled until she set him down, and he took off again. Etta, coming up the road behind him, caught him, and the two headed back to wherever they had been. Lou looked at the crowd. Those who had been doing chores stopped, giving her wide berth while they stared. Lou felt, standing in the middle of them, the full weight of everything she had begun realizing. Lou had known her country. She had spent the bulk of her life fighting to better it. But all that fighting hadn't changed anything. The council had brought peace to Grace Loray, but the old traps of prejudice and disunity were in place for the island to disintegrate again, just as it had under Argrit. Vex broke free of the crowd.
They aren't the best at welcomes, he told her.
She stretched taller despite the growing pressure to buckle.
What is this place?
A place of sanctuary, someone else said. A place of transition.
The crowd parted for a short, intense woman with graying black hair, so long it served almost as a cloak around her knotted dress. She had a tattoo identical to Kansu's, the Tunkian mark of their gods, though hers sat delicately across her round nose. She stopped, looking up with annoyed, dissatisfied eyes that made both those emotions seem like Lu's fault.
Fatima, Lu guessed.
Fatima lifted an eyebrow.
And you are?
How best to introduce herself? Lu straightened.
A representative of the council.
Fatima glowered. She said something in Thuti. Vex responded. Fatima frowned, said something back to him, and Vex batted his hand at Lu and replied again.
I'm right here, Lu said. I already know you speak the Grace Loray dialect.
Fatima frowned at Lu.
There are 5 languages spoken in Tunkhe, she snapped. How many can you name? I speak the Grace Loray dialect for the same reason all Tunkians do here. Because we have no other choice.
Lu slid back a step.
I'm sorry, was all she managed. I'm sorry,
We do not want the council's sympathy. Why did you come?
She scowled at Vex.
Why did you bring her here?
We need your help, he told Fatima. An Argridian diplomat's gone missing. We thought you might be able to hear what happened to him, or his location, or...
Fatima pivoted, cutting Lu out of the conversation. But based on the furious pitch in Fatima's voice and the harsh flush of red to her golden brown skin, Lu found she was all right with not being the woman's focus. Kansu was nowhere to be seen. If she had heard Vex, likely they'd have 2 angry people to fend off. But finding Milo would help them by stopping the tensions with council soldiers, things would get better. As Lu stayed next to Vex and Fatima, with the crowd's disdainful eyes on her, she felt more and more like an intruder. Would uncovering Milo's plot and having Vex bring him back to the council fix the wrongs that made this raider sanctuary necessary?
Can you assist us or not? Lu interrupted,
panicked about the slow, methodical unwinding of the plan that she had put her faith in. Fatima rounded on her. Despite the woman's short stature, she seemed to tower over Lu.
You have no idea what you have risked coming here.
I do, Lu tried.
If you do not help me find General Ibarra, the Argridians will push the council to blame raiders for his disappearance.
The council has already blamed raiders for his disappearance.
Fatima pointed out people as she mentioned them.
Soldiers who were raiding tenement buildings forced those people from their homes. The people there? Soldiers confiscated their boats while looking for the missing Argridian. More are here because this syndicate no longer has the resources to employ them, thanks to the council's seizing of the Tunkian mainland trade. The council is the reason for this place, as much as Argrid once was. Whatever you think to change by finding that Argridian general, it will not help. You do not understand the problems here. None of the council does.
Lu faltered, struck breathless as she looked at wide-eyed children and their somber parents. She remembered the soldiers at the falls and the Grace Loreans in the streets of Port Mezitib.
We do not fear the council, Fatima said. We lived through Argrid's oppression. We lived through 5 years of the council telling us to either conform or become destitute. The council would not have won the war without us. Tunkhe worships the god of chaos and the god of death, as well as those of rebirth and of life. We do not fear.
Nayeli shoved out of the crowd.
How long are you going to pretend this is working?
Fatima responded, but in Thuti, the brush of her hand signifying that she was trying to ignore Nayeli's question.
What should we do?
Kansu appeared now. The look on her face was a mirror of Fatima's, but closer to grief than fury.
Become Grace Lorraine?
It's not as easy for everyone to abandon their culture as it is for you.
I didn't abandon anything, Nayeli spat. This isn't Tunke. We aren't Tunkian. We don't owe allegiance to the Empress, and we've never even seen Tunke's deserts or its mountains. I can't keep living in between.
She spun on Lu.
Tunkians started this sanctuary to protect the people Argrid tried to imprison up at Fort Chastity. They'd even smuggle some people out.
She motioned at the looming wall,
to safe houses away from the port.
Kansu hissed for silence, but Nayeli kept talking.
They should have shut it down when the war ended, but they still let Tunkians live here, new immigrants and families who've been here forever, too. Gods! It's crazy, right? They're so damn proud that they'd rather be here in squalor but still call themselves Tunkians than have a better life and be Grace Lorraine.
Kansu wilted.
You're as bad as the council for thinking it's that simple.
Fatima stated something in Thuti. Nayeli, for the first time, responded in Thuti, but she dropped her eyes to the ground. Fatima reached into her collar and freed a necklace made of stones. They clinked as she worked one loose and tossed it at Nayeli's feet.
We will help, Fatima said. Then you will leave. Don't return. Not anymore.
She left, Kansu and the crowd trailing after her. Nayeli's eyes stayed rooted on the stone.
Thanks, Nay, Vex said.
She looked up.
Please. Fatima's predictable. And Kansu? Wave a busty woman in front of her and she's a goner. It doesn't take much to get them to comply.
Her words were light, but her face was hard. She bent to snatch the stone, and Lu saw a symbol she didn't recognize carved into the surface.
What does that mean? Lu asked.
She's my aunt, Nayeli sniffed. Rocks have special meaning in Tunke. You take one from near the home of someone you love and carve this word on it. It says family.
Nayeli let it fall out of her hand before she lifted her eyes from Lu to Vex.
What are you idiots still doing here? Don't let them change their minds.
Before they could say more, Nayeli riffled her hands through her hair and strode down one of the dirt paths. Lu gawked after her, but Vex cleared his throat.
This happens every time we visit, though there's usually more bloodshed.
He started in the opposite direction. Lu followed, after swiping up the stone. Would Kari have had stones like this if the war hadn't interrupted their lives? Would Lu, if she hadn't been so determined to be Grace Lorraine? The stone should have felt brittle, a rock beaten by river currents. Lu slid it into her pocket and hurried after Vex.
16. Ben sat at the desk in his front room, crouched over parchment and quill. He wrote until his vision swam and his candle burned low, and every muscle in his back cried out for reprieve. Of the more than 50 varieties of botanical magic native to Grace Lorraine, inquisitors found that 4 were pure enough to use to heal people. A tray of garlic, fish, and tomatoes slid onto the desk.
Eat,
Yakis prodded. Ben didn't look up, wringing his brain dry to extract every drop of magic knowledge.
Several texts from Grace Lorraine claim there are more, but some, like Drooping Fern, have proven too dangerous to use as their effects inflict harm or encourage the sins of overindulging and intoxication. The holy ones are Cleanse Root, Helica, Power Sage, and Alova Pipe.
Yakis planted his hands on the tabletop, jolting the candle flame.
Tell me what you need, he whispered. Let me help you. Let me in.
Ben closed his eyes.
He needed supplies. He needed a new laboratory. Could he still use the Mecht's aid money? He needed plants, too, but he doubted his father would provide more. But he needed this now, before Eleazar swept in and withdrew his orders, before Ben lost his feeble grip on change and defensors led him to a pyre the same way he had been living all these years, alone and afraid. Though, that wasn't true. He hadn't been alone. Yakis's breathing was calm and rhythmic. Ben kept writing, forcing himself to remember everything Rodrigo had once taught him. Helica and aloe pipe used together cured boils. The result was instant when applied to the skin in a paste and imbibed in a liquefied tonic. Power sage and helica cured influenza, again applied in both a paste and a tonic, but healing came after 2 days of repetition. Yakis grabbed Ben's hand and lifted the quill. Ben rose with it.
This is what I am.
Ben spoke so Yakis couldn't.
A servant of the pious god, doing the bidding of our eminence.
Until he decides what I am doing is sin.
Until he reveals his true motive, and it was to get me on a pyre all along.
I know, Yakis said. You walk around as though the fate of your people's souls hangs on your actions. It is one of the things that made me fall in love with you. You care in a way few people in Argrid still do. In the way my family did.
Yakis's smile was lopsided. When I see your devotion, I hear my sister's voice speaking of honor and loyalty to Argrid. You will one day be the king Argrid needs. Grace Benyat.
Yakis smiled, expecting Ben to be honored. But Ben's heart squeezed. Would you love me if you knew what I believe? The question sent him buckling back into the chair. When it came down to Eleazar's will or Ben's, which side would Yakis choose? The side of the pious god or the side of a heretic? Ben crouched over, bile crawling up the back of his throat. If he lost everything to create this tonic and show Argrid that magic could be good, he would make the best goddamn healing tonic the world had seen. It would cure everything, even shaking sickness, like Eleazar wanted. Where to start, though? Ben hadn't gotten further than breaking down a few plants before the fire 3 days ago. How to combine them into a healing tonic? How to test it? The ink on the parchment blurred, and the words melted, and all he saw were flames spreading out from the candle, taking over his world. Ben jolted as though he'd been burned. He was an idiot. The Mecht warrior. The one his Inquisitor patrol had caught along with the raider crew. He had spared the man's life because he knew things about botanical magic that no one in Argrid did. Yet Ben had made no move to interact with him. Ben shoved himself to his feet and took determined steps around his desk. Yakis intercepted him.
Where are you going?
Ben stopped, feigning nonchalance.
Grace News.
Now? Are you?
I don't need your help,
Ben told him, begged him. Stay here. Don't see what I must do. Don't see this side of me. Please, please.
No, it's fine. I'll ready a carriage,
Yakis said and disappeared. Ben sank to the edge of the desk. Yakis would follow him into the holding cells. Anything he said to the Mecht, Yakis would hear. But Eleazar had not yet told him to stop working on the potion. He had to do so with caution before he lost more than he could bear. Grace Neus Cathedral never closed. The pious god always welcomed children who needed guidance. When Ben entered, he wasn't surprised to see wayward souls huddled in the pews, monkses and a priest lighting candles for the graces. Ben hurried up the side, making his way to the door at the front of the cathedral, one he'd gone through with his Inquisitor patrol dozens of times. The door led to a staircase, guiding Ben and Yakis down to an intersection of halls lined with barred cells. Here, the color of the cathedral met its opposite. The walls, floor, and ceiling were dark gray stone, with